Welcome to Rebel Health Radio, bringing the best in alternative and integrative medicine to your ears. Hi everyone, it's Patricia Warby, Alchemy Therapies, My Emotional Audit, and all the other things. And today I want to talk about dysregulation in the brain. And I want to bring in several strands today because I've been very busy between last week and this week, writing, reading, researching. But yesterday I took some time off because it's really important to take time off. And I went and saw a film called Back to Black, which is about the life of Amy Winehouse. It's a drama based on a period of her life where she was just, you know, she had recorded her first album and her second album and was winning plaudits everywhere. She got a Grammy. It shows the awards ceremony and how she received that with such shock because it was actually presented by Burt Bacharach, who was one of her heroes. But it's also a sad tale, of course, because the drug addiction and the alcohol really played havoc with Amy. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about why people end up in those situations, even when life seems to be working out really, really well. Having said that, I must say it was a very stressful life. The press hounded her terribly. They just wanted her to fail, really. And I think the film covers that really, really well. It also looks in quite a lot of detail about her relationship with Blake Fielder Civil. Now, he has been blamed by everyone, really, the family in particular, for introducing her to drugs, which could be said to be true. He liked cocaine. He then got into heroin and introduced her to heroin. But before that, she was already struggling. And it has to be said that people don't get into drugs just randomly. They get into something because their brains are already dysregulated. Their nervous system is already dysregulated. And alcohol uses the GABAergic system, so it's very soothing initially. I don't know what system heroin uses. I think cocaine's a completely different system. I think that's dopaminergic. Because you have all these different neurotransmitters in your brain, and which system is triggered will give you a different kind of high, if you like. But Amy already had considerable issues with alcohol. And, you know, this is shown very clearly in the film, and it was also shown very clearly in the documentary that I watched a few years ago, which was also really, really good. But it's trying to give a positive view of Amy and her hopes and her wishes, you know, as well as her struggles, because everybody is a mixture of, you know, the good and the bad, you know. And we all have good intentions. Most of us do have good intentions about how we're going to live our lives and how we're going to treat others and how we're going to treat ourselves. And she really was incredibly talented. I mean, her songs were phenomenal, and just her arrangements, I think that's probably what she won the Grammy for. And, you know, to watch someone go downhill is very, very hard. The film portrayed her father and her mother in perhaps, well, it didn't really cover what happened to her mother. There was a reference to the fact she wasn't well. And you kind of get the feeling her mother wasn't really in her life that much, although they lived together. She was sort of absent in a weird way. So whether she had depression or some form of mental health issue, I don't know. I probably could do with researching that. Much more is said about Mitch, her father, because he was a larger than life character in every way, is, I should say, because he's still with us. And, you know, in the film, it's shown that he took her everywhere in his taxi and, you know, he was a loving dad. And I'm sure that's very true. I also think there were some issues there, though. I do remember in reality, he took a film crew on holiday, on their private family holiday. So he was definitely what I would call acting out a sort of childish impulse there to kind of, I think he just loved the fact that she was famous and wanted to capitalize on that. And that's a very difficult thing when you're a private person. And Amy never had privacy. She struggled with that because the photographers, the paparazzi were kind of camped outside her house all the different places she lived, but particularly the last place when, she'd already got quite famous. She couldn't leave the house without being followed and snapped and goaded, actually. And I think that's covered really brilliantly in the film. And how that must feel that you can't walk down the street to get your groceries without, a posse of people just following you and snapping you all the time. It's such an invasion. But I think the roots for her were early on. Now, I don't know her early history. Nobody really knows that but her family, and we want to respect that. My point is really to make the key link between what happens in early childhood is often how life plays out for you. Your brain is immature when you're born. In fact, it's doing a lot of developing in the womb, but it's still relatively immature when you're born. And so humans, more than any other animal, are very dependent on the environment that they encounter. And a lot of parents are incredibly stressed. Life is very, very stressful, particularly if there's disharmony in the parental relationship and if there's, separation or divorce. That is incredible. It's a well-known adverse childhood event for many, many people. It doesn't mean I'm suggesting people should stay together just for the children, but the divorce itself can be very stressful, but it's usually the lead up to that and how a child perceives that. So we are, more than any other animal, shaped by our experience or our environment that we develop in. And the first few months and years are particularly significant because the brain is undergoing a huge explosion of growth at that point. Now, I've been reading The Myth of Normal by Gabor Mate. I'm probably about a third of the way through. I will be doing a ref full review of that magnificent book. It truly is. It's an opus. I think he's gathered together all the understanding and all the experience of 40 years of being in medical practice, but not just that, of being a human being and a father who by his own admission, failed to provide the emotional support for his family because he was still a child in an adult body. And many of us are. And I would certainly hold my hand up there, I think, for the first 30 odd years of my life, maybe 35, 36. I was still very childlike in my responses. I thought of myself as terrifically grown up. I had managed a life, but emotionally, I was still in reactivity to threat. Because if you grow up in an environment that feels unsafe, your panic alarm system in your limbic brain is likely to be easily triggered to stress. And I think that was true for Amy for sure. And alcohol kind of calmed it down. She was very nervous on stage, so it allowed her to feel less nervous, I'm sure, but it became a habit that she couldn't break then. And that's, what happens in addiction is that it's initially solves the problem, but it's temporary, and you have to keep building and building to get the same effect, the numbing. So for me, alcohol was never really my thing. I tried it, didn't like it particularly. I numbed myself with work. That's how I did it. That was my addiction. And I still have a tendency to that, if I'm honest with you. But I am learning ways in which to calm that in other ways. Gardening was always really important for me. Working with the earth and the soil and the repetitive nature of working physically, I always found incredibly relaxing. And so that was something I took up. And initially, I was a gardener before I was a therapist, a garden designer, in fact. And I planted and designed, well, hundreds of gardens over the years. And so you find a way to self-regulate if you can. But the imprint of those early experiences, the early stresses in your life, do not go away. And they are particularly difficult if in your adult life you have no support. Now, for Amy, it's very telling, actually. As I said, her mum was kind of out of the picture. Her dad was there, but he loved her. There was no shortage of love, but he wasn't always there for her in ways that she needed. And I think that's the problem with a lot of parents. And that's not to blame parents because it's a really difficult job. And often parents themselves were not raised in ways that they needed. And And so this dysregulation, this disharmony in your nervous system sort of repeats down the generations because parents just don't always know how to regulate themselves, let alone regulate a child. So stress can come in at any time in your life. You know, for me, it was a breakup of a relationship, and for Amy as well, actually, when she split from her husband, Blake Fielder Civil. The story of their relationship, it was quite up and down. You know, he broke it off a couple of times, but the final time he broke it off was after he was sent to prison. And in prison, he clearly had some kind of therapy, which made him realize that they were in a downward cycle of mutual dependency, and that they were sort of upping the ante for each other and making each other worse. And he decided to end it. And of course, that was very hard for her. And I think probably led to whatever happened, you know, in her final few days. But I do know that these states of anxiety, because I've experienced them myself, are really intolerable when your brain is telling you that you have such threat going on inside and you can't regulate your system. And it's not just what's happening in your life right then, it's all the previous times that sort of come up to bite you, of feeling unsafe in your body. And of course, if that's the case, you have no safe grounding in your experience of being. There's nowhere to run. There's nothing to fight. And that's what anxiety is. It's a sort of cipher for feeling unsafe and not knowing what to do about it. It's the fear of the feeling. So when stress comes up and you get easily triggered like that, you end up desperately seeking solutions to try and resolve the anxiety. And however, whatever method you choose will likely be temporary unless it's something that really grounds you in your experience rather than takes you away. So stress is a real thing, and it's perceived differently by everyone. It's not the event that happens to you that stresses you, it's the meaning you make of it. So if, let's say, somebody criticizes you, and you have an inner belief born of early experience that you are worthless or you'll never make it, you'll always struggle, then criticism resonates with that belief and creates a huge effect in your body, which you can't always locate as an emotion. It sometimes just comes out in symptoms, whether that be fatigue or palpitations or tingling or numbness. The body is reading the signals from the back brain, from this emotional brain that's saying we're under threat, and will create symptoms that kind of randomly appear and will move and change depending on what emotion it is you're repressing. So there's lots to say about that, really. How to overcome it is a more difficult question, because it's basically got to be something that allows you to feel safe. Now, in the movie, Amy's safe person was her nan, her nan, who was also a singer back in the day and had performed at Ronnie Scott's. So she had that up till a certain point, and then her nan got lung cancer, probably all the clubs that she'd appeared in and all the smoking, no doubt, didn't help, and died while Amy was in New York. And I think that really affected her too. So it's a story, but it's a true story of a person that felt overwhelmed and under-supported. And that is the story of very, very many children right now. And it's not the fault of the parents necessarily. I mean, I think there's no point in blaming people. We have to get away from that. We're all doing the best we can. But if we're all dysregulated, which most of us are, and certainly since COVID hit, a lot of us are traumatized from that experience, it's very hard for us to regulate others because we're not in a regulated place ourselves. So it's a difficult thing to achieve regulation, unless you go into the body. And so breath work is really important, and just noticing where you're breathing from. Lots of people breathe from the upper chest when they're stressed. And so they're bringing in muscles around the neck, which can cause headaches and neck and shoulder pain, because you're bringing in these muscles, these accessory muscles to breathe from, when in fact the breath should come from the belly, much lower down. And so just noticing how you breathe and maybe building in some deeper belly breaths and locating that can be very powerful. Another method is to hum or make a noise in your chest, or to actually tap your chest very gently. And that stimulates your thymus gland and your vagus nerve, which is really important for calming everything. I use havening, which is a way of just using touch, which stimulates oxytocin, which is the kind of love hormone, and just feeling that sense of connection with yourself. Sometimes you also make statements out loud at the same time, which help to talk to the back brain about feeling safe and connected and supported. One of the most profound things, if you come and work with me, is to feel that you're supported in your journey. And we often say, I can do this, whatever it is, because I'm supported. And to watch people's face change when they hear those words, and to know the truth of that, because I'm with them, I understand what they're going through. I can't experience it for them, but I know from my own journey, feeling like you're out of control is one of the biggest triggers to keeping the anxiety cycle going. So you get sensations in your body that feel overwhelming. What do you do with those if you can't cope with them, if you don't know what they mean? Well, you will numb them, you will distract yourself. You know, these are all the tools we have. But if you can come into your body without fear and just observe, and then have someone to walk alongside you and support you, that is really key to overcoming all kinds of dysregulatory symptoms, whether it's ADHD or attention difficulties, fatigue or pain in the body, addiction. These all have at their root this dysregulation of the human nervous system from early experience. So that's going to be something I'm going to be presenting on at a conference very soon. We've got ME Awareness Week coming up in May. I'm going to be doing a little talk about dysregulation, looking at the nervous system a little, and how people can find solutions underneath the diagnosis, underneath the label, if you like, to find an inner peace. And then I've also been invited to do a keynote for a Health Coaches Association, the HCA, in July. And I'm going to be doing a bit more on emotion there, and why emotions have a signature in the body. And depending on the emotion that you're primarily repressing, different symptoms appear. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, well, you know, obviously, please, please subscribe. But also, if you want to come and work with me, you can find me on alchemytherapies.co.uk, and also on my regular website, patriciawarby.co.uk, which is my sort of books and teaching and education. All right, well, I wish you a good week, and I will speak to you soon. Take care, everyone. Bye for now.
Hey, hope you enjoyed listening to Rebel Health Radio. Do subscribe and look forward to catching you soon.